Welcome to the Car, Sim and Race Driver Show, presented by Hugh Hattrick. Drive fast and try not to crash. Hello, we are live on Hugh Hattrick on YouTube, and this is the Car, Sim and Race Driver Show with an incredible special guest who I'm incredibly excited to be interviewing here tonight, none other than James Kellett. Welcome, James, to the show. It's great to have you on the show tonight.
Oh, hello, everyone. Yes, it's a great honour to be part of the show and like to answer a few questions that I'm going to get kind of asked my way shortly.
Yes, but don't worry, they're all very carefully chosen. So it's Yeah, basically, I mean, you know, we've seen you in GT3, you know, the Ginetta GT series, and for anyone who's watching who hasn't seen Ginetta, the Ginetta G5, GT5 Cup you were in? Because you're in a number of different...
Yeah, the Ginetta GT5 Challenge Championship, I've won twice now.
Yeah, I mean, if you haven't seen it on YouTube and or live when you've been watching it on TV, it is the most amazing group of cars to watch because it is crazy. I mean, these cars look like they're just going to fly off the track with one wrong move. It's that skittish. And you seem to be able to hear these things into the corners. I mean, the best one I've seen is the Duffus dip at Knock Hill as you were coming on. I think it was the last lap or second to last lap. And the car, you kind of flung it in and it was basically drifting into Duffus dip as you come down the hill and into the left. And it looks absolutely spectacular.
Yeah, well, that's it. Exactly like that. To be a fast racing driver, you have to be on the edge of your racing car. And every racing car has a different window of how on the, we call it on the edge, on the knife's edge you can be. And to be in that window is extremely hard. A lot of you can be fast. You can be a fast driver, but it's the really fast drivers that you see the difference in, and they're the drivers that get to the front and win the races. But yeah, like you said, at Knock Hill, I will. I remember that race like it was yesterday. I remember all my races like it was yesterday. But yeah, that particularly that one anyway. But but yeah, no, Knock Hill, what a circuit and what a championship, Ginetta Juniors. It's a 100 horsepower rear wheel drive car, limited to 100 horsepower because obviously it's junior racing where you're racing from the ages of 14 to 17 year olds. So it's all junior racing. It's probably the most competitive championship in the whole of the UK, if not Europe, and maybe in the world as well. It's incredible.
Amazing.
The talent that comes through Ginetta Juniors is absolutely outstanding. And a lot of the front runners in Ginetta Juniors, when they move on to anything else from Ginetta Juniors onwards, they really shine. And there's been some great names coming through Juniors and people have got really far from the Ginettas.
Now, did Jamie Chadwick race in Ginettas? I think I remember seeing a race with her in it that I thought was a Ginetta race.
Yeah, that is exactly right. Yeah, so I actually raced the 2 years with Jamie. Me and Jamie Chadwick went through the Ginetta Junior Rookie Championship and then the Winter Series and then the main championship. So that was 2013 and 2014. We both raced against each other. And yeah, Jamie, she's doing very well for herself, doing racing in the W Series and many other single-seater series across the world as well.
Yeah. How did you find her? Did you ever have some kind of close combat with her in the races and things?
Well, from the races that I remember racing against Jamie was very much in my early stages of car racing myself. So, kind of the first winter series that I had a good few battles with Jamie at Snetterton. But when I started to progress through the pack and get to the front, I was very much racing against people like Lando Norris and Jack Mitchell and other names like that, really, that were really at the front and kind of my main competitors for the year, especially in 2014, because that was my second year. So I was very much pushing to win the championship and pushing to get as many wins as I possibly could. And yeah, it was great racing at the front.
I mean, that's the thing, because you won that series twice, wasn't it? Or was it the Ginetta GT5? I'm a bit confused, sorry.
Yeah, no, that's not to worry at all. So yeah, so 2013 and 2014, I did Ginetta Juniors. So I won my rookie championship in 2013. I won the Winter Series championship in 2013. Then 2014, I came vice champion. I should have won the championship, but a bit of bad luck and a bit of just general motorsport yeah. bad luck. I became vice champion. But and then from 2014, I moved into Ginetta GT5 Challenge in 2015. I actually won that in my first year. So that was my first year of senior racing. And Ginetta GT5 is basically a fully unrestricted version of the Junior. So it's running around 160, 170 horsepower range. It's on some a good set of dampers. It's on a slight different style gear ratios. It's on slick tires. So it's the grip and the power is by far exceeds the Junior car. But yeah, so I won that in 2015. And I also won... So 2016 to 2017, I had 2 years out due to lack of funding because I had funding issues because motorsport is not many people know, but motorsport is extremely expensive. So I struggled to get the sponsorship and I struggled to get to the funding to be able to put myself in a seat for the 2016-2017 race season. Yeah. And then 2018 came around and I got a great opportunity from Century Motorsport to put me in a GT5 again. Wow. So... Back to racing what I was racing in 2015. So we basically went to the media day. I hadn't driven a car for 2 years.
Wow.
Turned up media day and I was a second faster than everyone.
Wow.
Without a car for 2 years. So I was I was properly hungry for it. I was going to win no matter what, and won the championship by over 110 points in 2018. So I very much cleaned up and. It was a great year and a great competitive year to be racing GT5 again.
Yeah, that is an amazing championship, you know, amazing series of results. Well, congratulations on that. I mean, that's a huge thing. I mean, you must be, your trophy drawer will be, and the room will be getting bigger and bigger with that kind of success, because there's a lot of races in the year, and to win it like that is to really dominate it. That's like what Mansell did back in 1992 when he won five races on the trot and then on to his championship by Hungary. But no, that's sound something. So I mean, obviously we were saying that it's very expensive to keep in motor racing, even if you're at the top of your game, which is what you are, and you know, winning these championships. Do you have plans, or is there any kind of signs that you might be able to get back involved or go or progress into higher formula?
Yeah, so last year, 2019, I didn't race again. So it's exactly the same issue with what I had in 2016 and 2017. I struggled to get the funding to be able to race, but a great opportunity has come again, and I've been working very hard behind the scenes to be able to get this opportunity to work. And it looks like, cross my fingers, I will be racing in the 2020 race season.
Fantastic.
So it's going to be the next class up as well from GT5. So it's looking around the GT4 style car in a proper GT series. So hopefully, fingers crossed. Nothing's 100% in motorsport until you're literally on the grid racing. So you never know. Yeah. But with what's happened with what's been happening so far, it looks like it could be a great year for my racing again.
Yeah, well, we really hope, I have to say, I'm sure all of our viewers and supporters will hope that you can get back on that grid to see you racing. Because I know that sounds fantastic. So when would the season start then? Is it kind of March, April time, or is it a wee bit later?
Yes, so it is the middle of April. The middle of April. Normally the race season starts around end of March, middle of April time. But yeah, so we've got a bit of testing planned and a bit of development on the car planned up until then, because a lot of people don't see what happens behind the scenes. So a lot of public don't see actually how much development and hard work and testing actually goes into to winning a championship or or making a car fast, or even making a driver fast, because it's not just about making a car fast. You're also making a driver as fast as possible to be able to win a race as well. So, so we've got a lot of testing, a lot of development planned. And then, mid-April, we start.
Fantastic.
The first round is at Donington. So hopefully we'll kind of see me on the grid, and I'll be out racing.
Well, we'll have to come down and see you and do a grid walk and see you on the grid or something like that. I managed to go down to see David Perrell in the GT Blancpain Championship last year when it came to Silverstone. And we managed to get tickets and we get on the grid for the grid walk. And it was fantastic just to be on, get all the atmosphere and all the kind of how it all worked. But that's many congratulations, because it does sound like it's a great feat to be able to get into motor racing and to be up in the leagues that you have done is really good. So will it be actually a Ginetta GT series car, or will it be a different manufacturer?
So no, it will actually be it'll be a different manufacturer, but it will be it won't be a Ginetta Championship. So it's actually going to be the next step up for me. So so what I've been doing so far is GT5 and that kind of category of racing and racing a Ginetta. And now I'm kind of taking the step up now to something called GT4 racing. So we have very much classes in motorsport, kind of in the GT level anyway. So there's two different kind of pathways you can go. You can go single seaters, you can go GT racing. I wanted to go GT racing, so I started off in the juniors and then went to GT5. So my next step is now GT4, and the next step after that is then GT3. So, but hopefully something maybe in a couple of years could hopefully plan me to go to GT3 racing, because that is my goal. That's really, really kind of where I want to be. Definitely in a few years' time anyway. But my next step's GT4, racing against all different types of manufacturers, racing all in the same race. So I was racing a Ginetta in a GT4 race. I could be racing against a Jaguar, I could be racing against a Porsche, I could be racing against a Ferrari, Bentley, Audi, BMW, that type of thing. But they're all under the category of either a GT4 or a GT3. And I'm going to be racing GT4 class. So hopefully, as long as we're competitive, we'll be looking to take the championship away in the first year.
That would be fantastic. I've done like on things like Gran Turismo Sport, you know, you can get obviously GT4, GT3 and things like that. So like things like the Renault Megane is GT4 on certainly on Gran Turismo, as you say, and then Porsche 911s and a number of, and Jaguar F-types as well, I think, wasn't it? And they do a whole number of different cars. So it's competitive, but I think, look, are those cars quite drivable? Are they able to kind of, is it quite easy to get to the limits on them quite quickly?
Yes, so normally, like I was saying before, normally when anybody that's ever come out of racing the Ginetta G40, either the Junior or the GT5, they move on to a category above like GT4, and they actually find it easier. Easier to drive, because the way a Ginetta works and the way the Ginetta Junior races and drives is so hard. You have to be extremely talented and very, very much on the knife's edge to be able to get the car round a circuit very quickly. And when you move up to the next levels, it actually becomes easier, because you have stuff like aerodynamics, you have bigger slicks, you have got more trick dampers, you've got more trick suspension, more electrical systems and everything like that, where a Ginetta is very yourself and the car, that is it. There's nothing interfering you whatsoever. So when I said, moving up to this next level, GT4, the cars are, you still have to be on it. There is still a window, and the window is that big, and you have to be in that window to be quick. But the window is bigger than what the Ginetta Juniors is, and then the Ginetta GT5. So hopefully, like I said, I've tested the car a few times, and I am fast. So hopefully we'll be competitive.
Yeah, are you allowed to say what manufacturer it is yet, or is it behind closed doors for the moment?
Ooh, unfortunately, Unfortunately, it's behind closed doors at the minute.
No, that's fair enough. That's fair enough. I won't push you on that. That's it. It's just great to know that you're back in the series. And I'm sure when it comes, you'll have to let us know. Send us an email and I'll let all my viewers know and supporters know what your news is. If you'd be doing a video clip or something like that to announce your news, that would be fantastic. But over the last year, of course, you've been working at a very special place, which I came down to and to visit back in November time, and that's of course SimTrack, which is this incredible simulator centre, really the most amazing sim experience. Tell us a little bit about that and how you got involved with that incredible outfit.
So SimTrack, wow, what a year it has been for SimTrack. SimTrack has only just had its 1 year anniversary. It was literally a couple days ago. And what a year it has been, and what an incredible opportunity it has been for me myself. So SimTrack, I am the performance director at SimTrack. So I am I do all the development, driving, and coaching at SimTrack. And basically, SimTrack is the North's leading premier sim centre. So we are not a gaming place. We specialize in myself as well in the sim, we specialize in sim driver development, race development, race preparation, making someone the driving talent is here, making them progress up to here, making them a better overall driver, and really improving them as a driver and making them as fast as we can possibly be. And that's basically my job in SimTrack. So we've got the sim in place, and it's an absolutely incredible sim. It's definitely one of the best in the UK, if not the best in the UK at the minute. And Rob Sharp, and then Adam Croft, who actually runs the business. Me and Rob do the development of the cars and the modelling of the cars. So Rob does all the coding behind it, as he's a data engineer. And I do all the testing of the cars then. So whenever I've been out testing a car in real life, I then come back onto the sim and feel like something needs changing. So then I tell Rob, can I have maybe a bit more front end or a bit more throttle sensitivity, or I need or braking torque or something like that on a particular model of a car. Uh-huh. And Rob will then change the model of the car to suit what I want. And that's why it's so good for developing a driver and moving a driver onwards, because we have the most up-to-date models of the cars that there is. Basically that is it. That is SimTrack, and what an opportunity and what a year it has been for SimTrack, and what a year it looks like it could be as well for SimTrack. We're getting we've got quite a few drivers on the list to be representing SimTrack, and as a sim user for the year and the race season, and hopefully we can get some podiums and some wins under the kind of the SimTrack. And also, because I'm racing myself, I will be using the sim myself, and I will be developing my other driver as well. That's going to be racing with me, and we are going to be using the sim to push ourselves to the limit and push ourselves to try and win some races and win the championship.
Yeah. Oh, it sounds fantastic. I mean, I have to say, when I came down last year with our co-host Jonathan, we had an incredible time, actually. All the way back up, we were kind of comparing our notes, or kind of our mental notes of how we did and how we could have gotten a little bit faster. But it was great because you're alongside us as we drove. And of course, first of all, we saw you drive, and then we swapped over, and it was just great to get your advice on when to brake and how hard to brake. And of course, the brake on that car is so hard. It's just like solid. And that's the biggest difference that you have from gaming on a normal PC. You just don't get that at all. I can really see how, if people are wanting to improve their professional racing, this is a great thing for them, because it's so realistic, and the noise, and even though it doesn't move as such, you feel like it is, because you're not concentrating on the whole thing. And I think anyone going just to improve their racing skills is going to be magnificent, because you do a few hours of that kind of training, and you're going to be so much better. Because you just learn so much. Just even in the 15 minutes that I had, I learned a huge amount. So it's what would you say is it's kind of, because it is so realistic, and it almost feels like you're in the real thing when you're in. What do you think it is that makes it like that? Is it just the advanced technology, or just because you're in a real car, in effect?
Yes, well, obviously technology has moved on so far, especially in the sim community and the sim world over the last few years. And it's the software. Well, first of all, it's the software. Second of all, you're actually sat in a proper race car. So the race car you sat in was the Aston Martin GT3 car. So that was actually a car that raced. It got crashed at Alton Park on the lap one of race one of the season, and it got written off. So the Aston Martin GT3 car that actually got raced got written off and got turned into a sim. They basically cut off the front of it, cut off the rear of it, and they turned it into a sim tub. And that's what we use now as our GT car platform. It's left-hand drive. You are actually sat in a proper race car. So the pedals you're feeling, the throttle, brake, and the clutch pedal, they're all three of those are exactly what it was like when the person was racing the Aston Martin GT3 car. And that's why the so hard, because a lot of people don't understand is when you actually get into a race car, you don't have all the servo assisted brakes like you do in a road car. So you really have to push the brake and stand on the brake pedal a lot harder than you think. And that's another reason why racing drivers have to be so fit, because a lot of public don't realize how hard you actually have to press the brake, or how hard the steering is, or how fit you have to actually be to be a racing driver.
Yeah, because you're, like all the racing drivers, are very, very thin. I always remember when Jeremy Clarkson interviewed Jensen Button, and he said, you're not even allowed facial hair. You know, it was like he wasn't even allowed a beard at the time when he was in Formula One, because, you know, it was everything had to be as light as it could be, isn't it? You have to be so fit to be able to do the time, and of course the length of time, it must drain you quite a bit. They lose quite a lot of fluids, don't you, when you're doing a race, especially if it's very hot inside the car and things like that. In fact, even though I'm obviously quite a bit overweight, but I was up to a sweat very quickly sitting in that car. So I apologise if I knocked you out when I was in there. But it's just such good fun, and you kind of get, it's so intense. And you recently had your winter competition, isn't it, where you were racing around Spa. And you had the fastest time for that, but obviously that was your benchmark, wasn't it, for people to try and see if they could get to it. But that must have been quite fun to see how local people came along and had a go. Was it a mixture of professionals and also just kind of everyday people that came in to have a go?
Yes, exactly. Well, so yeah, the winter challenge, it's just finished, and it was a great little challenge over the Christmas period and the kind of the first half of January, and it was interesting to see, really. So we were doing the full lap of Spa, and you had 20 minutes of practice, 10 minutes of qualifying. So the 20 minutes of practice, doesn't matter what time you did, that wasn't counted, and then the 10 minutes was you had to get your 10 minutes your fastest lap in those 10 minutes, and then that was your qualifying lap then to put on the board. And it was really, really good to see. And there was some really, really good competition as well. We were racing in a Ginetta GT4 Super Cup, a GT4 spec car. So it's pretty quick. It's a pretty good race car. And really, really good challenge. And yes, I set a lap, but obviously I run the sim. I'm the driver. I'm SimTrack driver, so my lap didn't count, obviously. The laps we had in it was good, really, really good competition, and it was open to both professionals and amateurs as well. So people that haven't really done much racing, there was a leaderboard for that, and people that had done a lot of racing and had race licenses, and a lot of my friends, well, in the kind of the racing community, racing drivers, were coming in and kind of setting. setting the best lap they could. And it was great to see. The kind of the top three drivers were all split by half a second, if I remember rightly.
It was about 2:30.3 or something, I think, when I saw it. I think that was at the winning time, something like that.
I think 2:30.3 was the fastest time. I think, or was it 2:30.2 or something? 2:30.3 was the quickest time. And then the next time down from that was a 2:30.5.
So it was pretty close, yeah.
Two tenths over a lap, that's 2.5 minutes.
Yeah, so that's pretty good.
It's crazy to think how fast. That is literally the difference. That could be the difference of ever so slightly missing a upchange rev down the main straight. That's literally that could be a difference of 5 meters under a braking zone.
Yeah,
at that type of speed. So it's pretty close, and there was some great competition, and that's why it was kind of the main reason why we did the challenge, was to get a good bit of competition over the winter break. Obviously, a lot of racing drivers, they go kind of they go behind closed doors, and you don't see them until then the season starts again. So that's why we started it. We did the challenge. We got some drivers out of the doors and kind of got them into the sim, and it was some good fun as well. It was some good fun. See the competition. It was really, really great, to be fair.
So did you have, you're saying you had separate competitions for kind of amateurs and then racing drivers. What was the time roughly for the ones who were the amateurs? Was it not too far away or?
No, not too far away at all, to be fair. I think the fastest amateur was 2:38. 38.7, I think, if I remember rightly. So it's they weren't too far behind. If you think again, if it's over a 2.5 minute lap, so you're only 8 seconds behind. Yes, 8 seconds between a professional racing driver versus a professional racing driver is a lot of time, but between a professional racing driver and somebody that has never really done it before, it's not a lot of time at all. And that's where the 20 minutes practice comes in, and that's kind of what my job is to do. So the amateur drivers and the novice drivers that haven't really done much sim time or done much racing previous, that came in to do the challenge, I coached them the best I could in those 20 minutes. So when they went and did the 10 minutes qualifying, they had the best chance they possibly could.
Yeah. Oh, that's I should have tried to get back down there and had a go. But unfortunately, I just couldn't quite manage it in January. It was every time when I saw the extension to the dates, and I was thinking, oh, I need to get back down to Leeds and have a go, but we couldn't quite manage it. But it's great fun though, because and to anyone watching, you really have to have a go, because it is you learn so much, and it's such an incredible experience. It's probably the nearest thing to what most people can do to actually get in a racing car and have a shot and see what it's like. And you were saying, I know that Adam said last year that he had a few people that came from the Ginetta, it must have been the Junior Cup, I think, before, was it Zandvoort, I think, they were going to race in? And the people who practiced at SimTrack, they then went on and they won, or one of them won the actual race in Zandvoort.
Yes, exactly that. Yeah, so Zandvoort, it was a new track for a lot of people on the calendar that was racing that year. And one of our drivers, Chris, he was coming in to do some development on the circuit, some testing on the circuit. And I worked with Chris a lot, and we really, really went into detail and made sure everything was precise and absolutely spot on before then he went to Zandvoort and raced and did all his testing and racing. And he'd never seen the circuit ever before, never raced on the circuit, never been there ever before. And he turned up and cleaned up, basically.
Wow.
He qualified pole and won most, I think, pretty much all of his races apart from one, I think. And what a great, great weekend he has. And he really does kind of put it down to the testing and the development and the sim time he had at SimTrack. And it's great to hear that, because he'd never seen the circuit before, and he turned up and it was exactly what we'd been teaching and what I'd been going through with him.
That's
it was great to hear that, because that is exactly what what I want to hear from as an instructor and as a coach. I love to hear the benefit that I give drivers to improve themselves as a driver when they actually go from the sim onto real life racing.
Yeah, now that's great, because I know that the software for a lot of the circuits on the you know that you'll use for sim tracking things, I mean, it's advanced so much that it has all the bumps exactly where they are, all the turning points correct. So to be able to go from that and then straight to Zandvoort itself and be on pole position and win the event, it's really, it just shows you just how far things have come. And I can certainly see that growing an awful lot, and more people who are doing racing wanting to come in and doing exactly that, to get practice before their big races so that they can be on top and know their stuff. Because the winter season, it's probably quite hard. They say they don't have anything to do and they need to keep their, I suppose, keep their focus, don't they? That's the thing to make things work.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, of course. A lot of drivers use the sim and sim track and different sims up and down the country to develop themselves and keep themselves in the car before then they in the winter before then they go and go into race in the season and the championship. And that's exactly what I'm going to be doing with my other driver, my amateur driver, that we're going to be going racing a GT car. So we'll be coming in doing a lot of sim time, doing a lot of testing. I'll make him as fast as I can possibly do before then we go and test the car and race the car in the season, because it really does make a difference. A lot of people don't understand what sim driving and sim development actually does to them in real life, but it's incredible the benefit you get as a driver. And because, like I said, motorsport is extremely expensive, and big GT cars, it could be up to like £5,000 or £10,000 a day to do a test in one of these GT cars, where you come to the sim, you do more track time, you got no damage because you can't crash the car, obviously, because you're stationary in the sim, and for a fraction of the cost. That's why sim is so popular now, because it allows you to test, it allows you to do development that you can't do at the race circuit when you're in real life.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. Going on from the sim side, what are the circuits that you most enjoy and are looking forward to this year? Will it just be in Britain, or will you be potentially going abroad to race in Europe as well?
So the championship that I will be racing in is a UK based championship. So it'll be all UK based circuits. So like Silverstone GP, Brands Hatch GP, Alton Park and places like that, Donington and Snetterton. So kind of the main two circuits I'm really looking forward to is Silverstone GP, because what a circuit it is.
Yeah, it's great. Kind of
the home of British motorsport, isn't it? So yeah, Silverstone GP is a great circuit I'm looking at going to. And another circuit that we could be really, really strong at is Donington as well, because the type of car that we'll be racing is going to be quite quick in a straight line. So any place where it's big and open, it's got quite long straights and fast corners, we should be quick at. So places like Donington and Silverstone GP will work really, really well for us. So kind of they're the main two tracks that I'm looking forward to racing this year.
Will it be at Donington, will that be the short circuit, or will that be the full GP circuit that they used to use?
We're actually racing. Got two rounds, so we've got one. The first round is Donington National, and third round is Donington GP. So we're actually racing on both layouts, but it's only the difference between the GP and the National is only one hairpin, so it's not really much of a difference anyway, really. Yeah. So, but you know, it's going to be great. It's going to be a great year, and I'm extremely excited to be back out racing again.
Yeah, oh, I bet. I once, when I was 18 years old, I got a birthday present to go to Donington Park. At that time, it was the Jim Russell School of Racing, or motor racing. Yeah. And I went there, and back in 1993, was it? Yes, 1993. And it was 2 weeks before the European Grand Prix at Donington, where Senna won. And I got to go on the Donington, is it the loop? Is it the back loop, they call it, which is the GP circuit at the very back where the hairpin is. And they had us in a foot. And the hairpin. And because I was a lot thinner in those days, it was quite funny. There was a whole bunch of us, and they had Formula Vauxhalls and then Formula Vauxhall Lotuses all parked next to each other. And because I was a thin person, they said, "You'll fit in that one." So, and the slightly fatter ones went in the Formula Vauxhall. So, so we all got in, and we were allowed to go around the Dorrington Loop around the same. But it's a very, very tight bend. And I remember the only way that I seemed to be able to get round this hairpin, or the, because they had it was kind of one way on one section of it. And they had a kind of a cone at the end, and it was so tight, you're virtually on the grass trying to get the car to go around, because it was a very, you know, didn't have much lock. So I had to kind of power slide it round, which they were not very impressed with, because that was the only way I could get it round the hairpin in first gear. And I used to slide it round the back and eventually get up, and off I went. And at that point, it was you had to not double the clutch, but you had to rev the engine to change down and do all the manual, what did they call it again? You know, when you put heel and toe to change the gears.
Yes, exactly. That's proper driving. That is. That's good.
Yeah,
that's what I learned in my my first year of car racing, was to heel and toe, because the type of gearbox we had, you had to heel and toe to gear. And it's taught me a great driving style, is that, and I will never forget that for my whole career and my whole life. I absolutely love it. I do it on the road when I'm driving my car, driving a manual car, will heel out, ground change. It's like ingrained into my head. I can't stop myself doing it. It's definitely good. Yeah.
It's brilliant fun. I remember that day because it was a really kind of grim, grey day that we did it. And it was early afternoon and it started to rain. And all I could see on my visor was the raindrops kind of going up my visor. And I thought, oh, goodness, this is not getting any better. And it was for a complete rookie, you know, who could barely, my shoes were far too big, even though I wore shoes that were kind of light and you know, kind of around my foot. So they weren't bulky. But they said it was obstructing the steering column or something. So it was quite difficult for me to move my feet. And of course, the pedals are so small and narrow. It was not great, but I managed to keep going for 20 minutes round the Dorrington Loop. I think I only stalled it once at the very start, and I managed to keep it going. But it was great fun. I remember because Jonathan was there and he took a video, and his one bit that he managed to miss was when the marshals told me, they went like this to slow down, because I was going too fast round one wee bit, because I just wanted to get the revs up, because they allowed you to go up to about 4,000 or 5,000 RPM at the time. And in a Vauxhall Lotus, it was actually quite fun, you know, it made a good sound.
Yeah.
And you felt like you were doing something. I just wish, instead of going round a little cone, I could have turned left and joined the circuit and done a proper lap. You know, it was that exciting. But so when you, because did you do karting before you did cars, or what was your kind of entry into racing?
Yes, so I started off in car racing, drivers do. So I started off when I was young. I was seven or 8 years old. I remember it extremely well. God, I remember my first car. My dad bought me. It was £100 Honda Cadet that I raced the local circuit, and it was an absolute shed. It was terrible. But it was, you know what, I didn't know that at the time, and I thought it was absolutely outstanding. I loved every single second I drove that kart. I remember it like the back of my hand. And yeah, so I started when I was 7 years old, and I raced in multiple championships, not just in the UK, but in Europe as well, and the world, and moved to car racing then when I was 13. And started racing cars when I was 13 or 14 years old, and it's incredible how what karting's like. Like I said, a lot of people don't understand what a lot of categories in motorsport are and what they're like. Karting and the type of karting that I was doing was literally like mini Formula One. I was racing against some of the biggest names in motorsport, and it was great. It was very much the elite of karting when I was racing it, and it was really, really good, and it was great racing and great competition. And to be fair, I'd like to go back at some point and do some karting again, even though I'm a bit tall for a kart now, because the optimum for a kart, you want to be quite small because of the weight distribution, yeah. And where the weight is in the kart, you want to be as low as possible. Me obviously being tall, you know, I'm going to be out of the seat quite a lot. So, but yeah, no, it'll be good to go back and race karts again. It was great fun. I loved every second of it.
Ah, so earlier in the program, you'd said about your kind of aim was like eventually GT3 rather than single seaters. Was there a reason that's the kind of the path that you chose, or the aim that you've kind of stated or that you would like to do?
Yes, so I can't lie, every racing driver, no matter who they are, come into karting, if they've started in karts, go into karts wanting to be a Formula One driver. I was looking up at Formula One drivers, and my hero was Michael Schumacher. So I was looking up at Michael Schumacher racing Formula One for Ferrari. And I was like, I want to do what he's doing, and I want to be him. So yeah, I had the dream of getting Formula One, and but unfortunately, it is literally it's one in a million or one in a billion chance you are going to get to Formula One. It is extremely hard, not just from the driving talent or the driving. It is extremely hard from the funding side. You need the backing of millions to be able to have the Formula One. So when I left karts, I went straight to Ginetta Juniors, which was a GT style race car. And from there I found my love of GT cars. For some reason I love the way a GT car works. I love the way it looks. Yes, I'd like to have a go in a single seater. I think the aerodynamics, how it works in a single seater, is absolutely incredible. But I truly believe that proper racing is GT cars. A proper driver is a GT car style driver, I think that is. I thought that was the best path for me to take, as well as the budget restrictions at the time as well.
Yeah,
Path of single seaters and the path of GT cars. GT cars is for the same that I would be racing in single seaters to what I'm racing in GTs this year. It'd be double the budget.
Yes,
double the budget. You'd be looking at getting on for £500,000for the season. If not more than double the budget to be able to race in the same category but in single seaters. So I was very much pushed myself because of what I wanted and what I wanted to do and what my dream was, and very much pushed by the budget as well and the budget restrictions and how much it was going to cost and how much money we had to spend over the next couple of years of racing as well. So obviously I had a budget that could have lasted me a year in single seaters or half a year in single seaters, but could have lasted me 2 or 3 years in GT cars. I was trying to plan my career around keeping out racing as long as I possibly could. And that's very much what my parents were doing around me as well. Obviously, me being young, I didn't really understand how money worked. No one does being young, do they?
So,
they were helping me out and really kind of digging my pathway for a career and making it trying their hardest to make it a career out of the budget that we had. I'm extremely thankful for my parents for doing that, because they are my number one for doing what they've done for me in my motorsport career, and I can't thank them enough for what they have done, because I wouldn't be here today if it wouldn't be for them putting the effort and the time and effort and money into my motorsport and into my career and what I love. Because a lot of people don't have that chance. And a lot of kids and guys my age have the dream of being able to race, just like I have. Everybody has a dream, But they can't do that because they haven't had the backing, or they haven't had the support from either the parents or people that will be helping them through their life. And I'm extremely thankful. I have had an opportunity, and I'm extremely lucky that I have been able to get where I've got in my motorsport career. So GT cars are definitely the way forward for me. I absolutely love the racing. I love what you can create as a career out of GT cars. And my goal for me is to race at Le Mans. I want to race at Le Mans, and that is a GT cars. Formula One don't race at Le Mans anymore. That is my goal, and I will try as hard as I can to make that goal possible.
Yeah. Well, that sounds fantastic, because Le Mans is brilliant, and it's just such a classic racetrack, and even with the chicanes, it's amazing. And of course, they do GT1, didn't they, and GT2, and then some different races there as well. In fact, there's a Le Mans series, isn't there? There's a kind of a special championship on its own. Is it called the Le Mans series? I think it is.
I think there's a championship that actually race at Le Mans called World Endurance. We call it WEC.
WEC.
WEC. That's it. So they race across some of the biggest circuits, best circuits in the world, racing all different types of cars, from LMP1 to LMP2, LMP3, and then GT3 and GT4 cars, all racing on the same time. And that is the goal for me. I want to be racing in some sort of LMP car, racing at Le Mans, racing in the World Endurance Championship. That is very much the goal for me. And I'm going to try as hard as I possibly can to make that happen. This year is one step closer to making that. And hopefully we can keep that kind of ball rolling and kind of make the most of it and really push forward to see what we can do then the following year.
Yeah. That sounds brilliant. Well, we hope perhaps there might be a viewer here who watches this on YouTube and sees your history, sees what you can do, and will come along and sign you up and say, there you go. There's a chance to drive for LMP1 and for Toyota or some or whatever they do, or Mercedes or Peugeot, whoever used to do it, or who's about to enter into that incredible series. That would be something. Look, I would just take this opportunity to thank you very much for answering our questions tonight. You've been fantastic, and you've gone into great detail and with great enthusiasm. And that's really what we love about the show, is that we know that our viewers always ask, you know, it's the enthusiasm from the drivers and from the guys that come on the show like your good self that make all the difference. Because me as a kind of gamer and kind of amateur kind of motorsport enthusiast, we just love to know what it's like, what it's like to kind of get behind the wheel and the atmosphere and how you manage to do it and all these things. So it's fantastic that you give us your time to be able to do that. So I'll quickly close the show there, but stay on the line, and I'll finish the show just for our viewers there. So to everyone who's been watching and listening, you've been watching the Car Sim and Race Driver show with our very special guest, James Kellett. Goodbye, and remember our motto, drive fast and try not to crash. If you're heading to Orlando this year, then you need Patrick's Orlando Holiday Guide. It's packed full of essential and crucial information to make sure you get the best from an Orlando holiday. You can get it on Kindle or iBooks, or have a copy posted out to you for just £5.50, including free delivery to UK residents. Visit hughhattrick.com now for your copy. And enjoy Orlando.